It's July 27th, and this is Rabbi Adler Shior.
Did you get caught in this thing over here?
What thing? What are they doing?
A car blew up.
A car what?
Blew up.
A car blew up?
Boker Tov.
So before we start, a few important announcements. Number one, this morning's shiur is sponsored by Carol Sherby and family in memory of her husband, father, grandfather, great-grandfather, Howard Sherby, Zechron Lebracha, who was one of our regulars here for many years. And I know there's a Philadelphia connection, and that's on the news these days. I'm not sure Carol's happy about that connection. But I did see a clip yesterday about the Democratic Convention of 1948. Say, Harry Truman, they're actually both Republican and Democrats, had their convention in Philadelphia in 1948 because there was first time possibilities of live television transmissions from Philadelphia to various parts in the United States. Remember those days where there was no such thing as a live feed? Now we have a live feed on a phone. Things have changed, indeed. Second is, welcome back. I was not here for the last 2 weeks, right? But I'm not going to be here for Shurim in August, except for the last week of August. That was the 3rd, the 10th, the 17th, and the 24th, five Wednesdays of August. I will not be here. I will resume Shurim at the last week of August, and what's a little bit undecided yet is, are we going back to Tuesday? I put in a pitch, believe me, I put in a pitch, so the powers that be have about a month to mull over this, and hopefully we'll all know about it before the Torah Tidbits of that week. But if there's no announcement to the contrary, so then the Shurim will be on Wednesday, I believe it's August 31st. But nevertheless, look out for the possibility that we might be moving back to Tuesday.
Now that we've gotten accustomed to Tuesday.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how that's going to happen. Somebody asked me if I would be interested in giving the second chair on Tuesday at 10:15. That also, every time you make a schedule change, it impacts on some people. We know that. So we'll try to play this carefully enough. Okay, so today we're going to really wrap up our discussion of the Aseret HaDibrot, the subject that's been captured our attention for the last month, because we were doing the Rav on Shmot, and we got to Parshat Yitro, and lo and behold, there was Aseret HaDibrot, and we didn't want to gloss over things. But we are at the beginning of 3 weeks, which is really a period of 10 weeks, 3 plus 7, if I have the math right, that's 10. And that is the three special haftarot from for Pu'anut, for affliction, where the first is this coming Shabbat from Yirmiyahu Perek Aleph, and the second is the second chapter of Yirmiyahu, and the third week, the Shabbat, this year happens to be Tisha B'Av, but it's Erev, the fast of Tisha B'Av. We read from Yeshayahu Perek Aleph, Chazon Yeshayahu, we call it Shabbat Chazon, as you know, and it's really a stinging indictment against Am Yisrael. It's certainly appropriate for the Shabbat before Tisha B'Av. And then we go over to the seven haftarot of Yeshayahu, which is a Nechama, which is a consolation, and the entire spirit of consolation that kicks in from Shabbat Nachamu. We call it Nachamu because of the haftarah, Nachamu, Nachamu Ami, but it also speaks of consolation, no doubt. We'll see in a few minutes that Shabbat Nachmu really gets kicked into play because of the date Chamisha Asar Be'av, Tu Be'av. And our Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik even moved it a little closer to our moment now. And he said that the spirit of Nechama kicks in at noontime on Tisha B'Av, which is a little bit of a novel understanding, because the laws of Tisha B'Av, in terms of the fasting, continue throughout the day. Although, and I don't want to digress too much, this year, just as last year with Tisha B'Av Zanidcha, pushed from Shabbat to Sunday, there are some leniencies here. And as they say, consult your LOR, your local Orthodox rabbi, for details. There are certain individuals who are exempt from fasting, Shavuos Abatamos, some Gedalia, Sarabat Teveit, certainly Tanit Esther, but Tisha B'Av would make the effort. And in this year, those people who quote-unquote enjoy the leniency of the other fast, it is actually in vogue also for Tisha B'Av Nidcha. And I heard this directly from Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zichrono Livracha, here in the Shir in Yerushalayim, with all its requisite understandings. Plus the fact that if there's a Brit this coming Sunday, which is the 10th of Av, so the halacha is that the Balei Brit, which means the principal Simcha, people who are involved in the Simcha, that is the father of the baby, the Moyel, and the Sandak, after Mincha, they break their fast. Now, you don't do that on a regular Tisha B'Av, but Tisha B'Av Nidcha, that's the halacha, that they would eat after in the afternoon. That too has a basis in the Gemara, in terms of a particular family Simcha of one of the families that donated wood to the Mizbeach, and their date was the 10th of Av, and it was a family Simcha for them. So when Tisha B'Av comes out on the 10th of Av, which means Tisha B'Av in the calendar was Shabbat, and it's moved to Sunday, so this halacha would apply as well. It's brought down in Shulchan Aruch, and it's actually practiced. So this year, Tisha B'Av is a little bit watered down on some level. So we should be aware of that. But the Rav pointed out that in any year, what happens at Chatzot, at midday, there is a feeling of some of relaxation of some of the laws. The feeling is in the air, especially if you go to shul for Mincha. So, you know, we put the parochet back on for Mincha. We set the chairs up regular for Mincha. It's not like at nighttime for Eicha and in the morning for Kinot, where people are sitting on the ground or somewhere near the ground. We put on talis and tefillin for Mincha, and the entire spirit of the Mincha is so different than the Shacharit, where in Shacharit there is a deliberate attempt to reduce tefillah, which is somewhat contradictory to a Tanit Tzibur. A public fast day means upgraded tefillah, and that's why we have Avinu Malkeinu, and that's why we have Slichot. And yet on Tisha B'Av there's no Avinu Malkeinu, there's no Slichot, there's not even the regular Tachnun that we'd say any day through the year. It's just very, very reduced, and that has a lot to do with the fact that it's Hester Panim, the feeling that Kadosh Baruch Hu, the sensing of God's closeness is not there. And the reading of the Torah in the morning of Tisha B'Av is from Parshat Betchanan, which is also an indictment against Am Yisrael. And then come Yirmiyahu Peretet Yud, and he calls out the Nashim Mekonenot, Vatisa Lavnehi, and to cry and wail for Churba, for the upcoming destruction. It's obviously appropriate for the morning of Tisha B'Av. But then it comes to the afternoon, all of a sudden we take out Parshat Kitisa from Sefer Shmot, and we read, Solecha Shnei Luchot Avanim Karishonim, and Shlosh Esrei Midot, Hashem Hashem Kerachum V'chanun, which is the core Slichot. So while we don't have formal Slichot as we normally understand it, but the Kriyat HaTorah of Mincha on Tisha B'Av echoes Slichot, which means we're getting back into the mode, and we're ready with Talis and Tefillin, ready, the chairs are up, and so on. There is a feeling that that Tisha B'Av is something has happened here. I remember down in Bershev, of the years we lived there, the Tunisian Jewish community, the women had this minhag that they would clean up the house and Tisha B'Av in the afternoon. Now that wasn't a big chiddush, because they cleaned up the house every afternoon. But on Tisha B'Av, they cleaned up the house specially because Mashiach's coming. It was a type of readying themselves for Biyat HaMashiach, which is a very beautiful example of what the Tisha B'Av afternoon spirit was all about. So I remember once Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zichron Livracha, who used to visit here in Yerushalayim often enough during his lifetime, and he was here once for Tisha B'Av, and it was announced, not publicly, but all you needed was just somebody to spread the word from, as they say, from Nipel La'ozen, and that he was going to give a talk in the old city in somebody's apartment at 4 in the afternoon. And remember, my son was then 16 years old. I said, you know what, I want you to come hear him. You may not understand every word. His English is very Litvish, but lo mishaneh, it doesn't make a difference. You'll see what a grandson of Reb Chaim was all about. Just at least once have that experience. And but let's come early because it's a small. The venue is very small. When I want to sit down 4 in the afternoon, make sure I get a seat. I got there at 3:30, and Rav Aaron was. I was. We were the first ones there. Rav Aaron was lying down on a couch. It was very embarrassing for me just to see him like that. He picks his head up and he gives me this beautiful smile and he goes, "Oh, Shalom Aleichem." Then he goes, "Oh, you, it's Tisha B'Av." But you know there are some Achronim who say that on after Chatzot it's Mutter. So right then and there, I got a whole shiur that even those limitations of greetings that we limit ourselves on Tisha B'Av, just as somebody Rachman Litzan sitting Shiva, they are relaxed in the afternoon hours of Tisha B'Av. And you could even say a Shalom Aleichem. It's not the biggest avera in the world. That according to some poskim, it's actually okay to say Shalom Aleichem on Tisha B'Av in the afternoon. This has to do with the fact that the spirit of Tisha B'Av has changed radically, where the theme in the morning is Kinot. And I remember the Rabban saying that Kinot, this whole business of Chatzot, it's not that the clock strikes 12 and now you pick up your chairs. He said this is sitting on the ground is a part of the feature of saying Kinot. So he said if you're saying Kinot at 2 in the afternoon, you still have to say it on the ground. And if you finish Kinot at 10 in the morning, you can actually sit on a regular chair afterwards. In other words, he didn't say it was a din of the morning versus the afternoon. He said it was halacha and saying Kinot. So normally, the minute was that we said Kinot until Chatzot. That's where the 12th, this year Chatzot, by the way, I think is 20 to 1, if not a quarter to 1, 12:45 p.m. at summertime. So that's what I mean by Chatzot. But be it as may, the oilam, as they say, the word, the minig is that to wait till Chatzot. I remember 1977, 2 months after Menachem Begin, Olav Shalom, was elected prime minister, so he visited the States. It was a very momentous occasion. He had been to the States often enough, but this is the first time as prime minister. He visited the Rav and Rav Moshe Feinstein and Lubavitcher Rebbe on all the interesting issues. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe and Rav Moshe Feinstein lived in New York City. You know, the Rebbe was in Crown Heights of Brooklyn and Rav Moshe was in Lower East Side Manhattan. In the summer months, the Rav was in Boston. He didn't come to New York. And the Rav heard that the Prime Minister wanted to talk to him, so he planned to make a trip, special trip to New York. And Begin heard that, you know, no way that, you know, the Rav Soloveitchik is going to make a special trip. He's going to fly to Boston to see the Rav. And the Rav sent back, no, it's proper that he should come to visit Begin and not the other way around because of Kvod HaMalchut. Because this is an element of Malchut. And Begin sends him back a message, but you're the Gadol Ador, and Gadol Ador, it's inappropriate that, you know, Gadol Ador should come to me. So the Rav sends him back a message, and he says, if you already agree that I'm the Gadol Ador, I'm paskening that I have to come to see you. And that's what happened. The Rav came, made a special trip to New York. And one of the things that was on the agenda to the three of the Gadolim was the possibility of moving Yom HaShoah to Tisha B'Av. And all three Gedolim thought it was a good idea, but the Misrad HaChinuch, the education ministry, nixed it because they said it's in the summer with his vacation and they would be able to educate the kids in the subject of the Shoah if this really was in the summer months. So there was something to that, and that's why the idea was dropped. But as part of that story, Menachem Begin went for Tisha B'Av night, for Eicha, to Rabbi Luchstein Shul, Rabbi Joseph Luchstein, in front of the Rav, still alive, KJ, Kilat Yeshurun, and he walks in there, and he sees everybody sitting on the regular pews, the regular benches, and Begin plops himself on the ground, you know, because that's the way he knows how to do it here in Yerushalayim, and he goes, what, in New York, they don't know a halacha? Imagine. Yeah. He was like appalled. He couldn't believe this. Anyway, so I already mentioned something about Parshat Ki Tisa, which is relevant to the title Hadibrot Hashni'im Ki Yisod LeNechama LeUmid, the second set of the Aseret Hadibrot as the foundation of national consolation. Now, when do we read the second set of the Aseret Hadibrot? Parshat Vetchanan, which is Bidyuk Shabbat Nachmu. Now, we all know that the calendar is so arranged that no matter what, whether it's a leap year or not a leap year, Tisha B'Av will always fall out between Parshat Dvarim and Vetchanan. That's why even this year, where there was an imbalance now with Chutz La'aretz for almost 3 months from after Pesach, it's now being adjusted in 2 weeks' time. With this Shabbat, we read Parshat Matot. Next week, we read Parshat Masei. But Chutz La'aretz, they're going to read Matot Masei together so that Dvarim will be the Shabbat preceding Tisha B'Av and Vetchanan the Shabbat right after Tisha B'Av. There's always Shabbat Chazon before and Shabbat Nachmu after Tisha B'Av. And Shabbat, and people say, because it's Nachmu. Okay, we understand that. But my contention is that it's not only because of Nachmu, but also has to do with the fact that in the Torah reading of Etchanan, it's the second set of the Aseret HaDibrot. And that second set has a lot to do with national consolation. Remember, you know, when we say Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami, so the Medrash says that there's a double expression of Nechama corresponding to what Yirmiyahu would later write. This is Yeshayahu, who's like over 100 years before Yirmiyahu. So Yirmiyahu would later write in Megillat Eicha, Bachotiv Kebalaila, a double expression of Bechi, of crying and wailing and so on. And that is open to interpretation. But the Medrash says, Hikdim Trufala Makah, that Yeshayahu already provides the remedy before the malady, before the sickness. Before the Bechi, there was already on the shelf the Nachamu, the consolation pills, were already in place. Now, it says, Lagdim Trufa Lemakah, before the Makah, before the malady, the illness, there was already the remedy, was already there, waiting for use. So if there was a double expression of Makah, Bachotiv Kebalaila, so we have a double expression of consolation up front, Nachamu, Nachamu Ami. But the Rabbi spoke about the fact that the Bechi, double expression of crying, is because there was the big story, the Churban HaBayit, destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, the Galut, the exile of Eretz Yisrael, the Churban HaAretz, and so on. But there was also, within the large picture, as we say on Yom HaShoah, the Kol Ish Yeshem. Everybody has a name. It was the individual who suffered. And many times, the individual who suffers gets lost in the national picture. And that's why in Yom HaShoah we try now to focus not so much on 6 million, which is a too large of a number to even begin to fathom and appreciate, but to talk about people and names and family members and so on, which makes the whole story become a lot more personal. And so too, in the keynote, some of the keynote deal with personal stories, and that's because there's a bechi and a bechi, a crying and a crying. There's the national cry, there's also the personal cry. So that's why it's Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami. There's a Nechama, and there's a Nechama which is national. So one is personal, and one is national. Even though it doesn't fit the Ta'amim, we call it in Yiddish, the trope. It's Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami. Mercha Tibcha et Nachta. Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami. But in Drash, you're allowed to shift these things. So it's Nachamu, Kama, Nachamu, Ami. Right? They're allowed to do this in the homiletics. But And if you're a chosid, you do it even not for homiletics, because you don't know how to read Ivra. But unfortunately, there was a thought that I once heard from Shlomo Kalbach, Chol Shalom, in name of a great Hasidic Rebbe, who I don't remember who said it, but it was a brilliant thought. Hazarim b'dim'a v'rina yiktzoru, we say in Shir HaMaalot, that those who plowed in with crying, with tears, Berina Yitzhar will be able to reap the rewards with great joy, which has something to do with the fact, as Chazal say, those who are mitabel, those who mourn the Beit HaMikdash properly, will be zocheh, will merit seeing the Yeshua and the redemption on some level. But this Hasidic Rebbe read it as follows: Hazorim b'dima, b'dima berina. Berina yiktzoru. What does it mean, bidima berina? That's clearly against the grammar, that even the crying should be done berina, in song. That song is not only for the wonderful, wonderful moments, but even in the agony, there's room for song. Bidima berina. Those are familiar with the niggin. Kalbach's niggin, Hazorim bidima, actually expresses this, right? Hazorim bidima, bidima berina, Hazorim bidima, bidima berina. And at the end he goes, berina yitzonu. So he actually incorporates that Hasidic vort idea into the niggin. Or what I once heard in the name of the Ish Kodesh, that was the Rebbe from Piacenta, on the Pasuk, Gam ki elech b'geitz al mavet, lo ira ra, ki ata imadi. Lo ira ra, I will not fear the evil. Why? Because you're holding my hand. Ki ata imadi, God, you're with you. Doesn't mean the evil's going away. It just means I feel comforted that you're with me as I'm going through the bad moment. But this Rebbe interpreted as follows. Gam ki elech begeitz al mavet, even if I'm facing the shadow of death, lo ira, I will not fear, comma. Ra, but it's, in Yiddish he said, it's tut mir schlecht. I feel awful about this, ki ata imadi, that you're also with me in this mess. Bad enough that I have to be in this mess, you too, because there's a Gemara that says, Masechet Megillah, imo anachi betzara, Kadosh Baruch Hu is with us in moments of stress and trouble and agony. So the Rebbe says, it's bad enough that I have to be here, you too have to be here. Ki atai matid. Again, this is against the grammar, but as a homiletical Hasidic thought, it's very powerful. Very, very powerful. So the Mishnah in Masechet Tanit, the very end of Masechet Tanit, source number one, as the Mishnah, the four prakim of Masechet Tanit, deal with taniyot, troubles, droughts, and other afflictions, personal and national. Finally, the Mishnah ends with a happy note. I mean, you can't just end the Masechet on a downer. So it ends with a positive note. And it says, Amr Rav Shem Gamliel, Lo ayu yamim tovim liYisrael kachamisha asar be'av ukiyom ha-kippurim. So there were two greatest yamim tovim for Am Yisrael, tu be'av, the 15th of Av, and Yom Kippur. The truth of the matter is, if you go to Tachan HaMarkazit today and take a survey, what are the two most Yemei Simcha in the Jewish calendar? I don't think anybody would have said tu be'av, because it's hardly marked today, and if it was Yom Shul, you're Davin, you don't say Tachan, but that's where it begins, that's where it ends. And Yom Kippur, to say that this is a Yom Simcha on this level, I mean, that's a far cry. I mean, the Mishnah in Masechet Moed Katan deals with the halachic side, whether Shiva or Shloishim is negated because of Yom Kippur. We know that a person said Shiva for Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, so with the onset of the Chag, there's no more Shiva. You get it from Shiva. And if there was finished Shiva, but they're still in Shloishim, so with the onset of the Chag, the Shloishim comes to an abrupt end. What about Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur? So the Mishnah has two opinions. So the halacha is that we're makel, we're lenient from the point of view of Dinei Evel, and indeed, Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah for that matter, they do terminate Shiva or Shloishim, so that there's enough Simcha in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, just barely enough to negate Simcha, to negate Avelut, where there are some opinions that claim that it's not enough. So you see that it's not the greatest day of Simcha. You might suggest Chag HaSukkot, that's called Zman Simchateinu, and you might suggest the Purim, you may Mishneh V'Simcha, you may come up with all kinds of dates, but Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur. So the Gemara actually tells us with regard to Yom Kippur, it's obvious, and with regard to Tu B'Av, we don't have a clue what happened. And the Gemara suggests six different reasons of why Tu B'Av is a Yom Tov. So, klal gadol b'Torah, one great principle. If there's six reasons, we don't know what the real reason, at least we don't know what the original reason is. But somehow when you see six reasons, so the cumulative effect of six reasons, so fine, it's a Yom Tov. Events that have really no relevance to us today, at all. And the Mishnah goes on to tell us that it was a day of Shiduchim, that Benot Yisrael Yotzot, and so on. Very nice. Mar says, if you take a look at source number two, from Masechet Tanit Daf Lamed, Om Rav Shem Gamliel, the quote from the Mishnah, Lo yu yomim tovim liYisrael kamisha asar ba'av kiyom kippurim. Bishlam yom kippurim, with regard to Yom Kippur, there's no need to carry out a long discussion. It's obvious. Mishum de'it be'slicha m'chila, it's the great day of atonement, of forgiveness. Yom shinitnu bo luchot achronot, it's a day that we were given the second set of luluchot. So l'chashne luchot avanim k'rishonim, chisel out a second set of luchot. That was on Rosh Chodesh Elul. Count a month and another 10 days, and you're at Yom Kippur. El chamisha asar b'av mahi. What's Tu B'Av all about? And then the Gemara goes on to tell us the six reasons. But with regard to Yom Kippur, it's like painfully obvious. What, you don't understand yourself why Yom Kippur is a big Yom Tov? And the truth is, the concept of simcha in halacha has to properly be defined. Because it doesn't mean gaiety, it doesn't mean smiling and laughing and jumping and dancing and even drinking wine or eating meat. Even though Gemara says in Psachim, Ein simcha ele bebasar, Ein simcha ele b'yayin. Simcha in the Torah means the awareness of standing close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is simcha. And if that doesn't exist, it's avelut. It's mourning. And that's why after the Meraglim story and after the Egel story, the Torah in both places says that the nation mourned. Now it wasn't that they were mourning just because there was an immediate loss of people who fell in punishment immediately after the Egel, or the whole nation was stricken after the Meraglim. The mourning was for the fact that there was distance between themselves and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That was the mourning. That was really the essence of the Avedot. After Yom Kippur is Simcha. As the whole purpose of Yom Kippur is, Ki bayom hazeh yichaper aleichem, letaher etchem, mikol chatotechem, lifnei Hashem titaru. That you're going to receive the tahara before Hashem. Lifnei Hashem, what does that mean? I mean, Kadosh Baruch Hu is, as we were taught in kindergarten, Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is everywhere. Remember that song? But, of course Kadosh Baruch Hu is all over us. What are you telling me, lifnei Hashem? Lifnei Hashem is an expression that means gilu shrina, that means standing before the shrina. It usually means standing in the proximity of Beit HaMikdash, or perhaps in all of Yerushalayim, v'zavachta, it says, v'achalta lifnei Hashem, which means you eat it in the context of Yerushalayim. That's what lifnei Hashem means. And sometimes it means all of Eretz Yisrael, as Yonah HaNavi was trying to run away, livroach li lifnei Hashem, leave Eretz Yisrael. So Pnei Hashem means the awareness of standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shiviti Hashem l'negdi tamid. And that occurs after Yom Kippur. And the Balei Kabbalah explain, that's why Sukkot, as Zman Simchateinu, is immediately after Yom Kippur. Because in fact, we should have been celebrating Sukkot in Nisan. Seder night should have been in the Sukkah. Because it's all Yetziat Mitzrayim, right? L'man yedu dorotechem ki v'sukot toshavti et b'nei Yisrael b'otzi otam me'eretz Mitzrayim. So why don't we have the Yom Tov of Sukkot grafted onto Pesach? So Kadosh Baruch Hu decided in His infinite wisdom to split by half a year, Nisan, Pesach, Tishrei, Sukkot. But the Kabbalists give the understanding that in order to achieve Zman Simchateinu, it can only happen as a result of Yom Kippur. So that's the Zman Simcha. That's why Yom Kippur is a great Simcha. And it's defined as Yom Shenitnu Bo Luchot Achronot. The giving of the second set of the Luchot was the concrete expression to Am Yisrael, including to Am Yisrael, that the forgiveness, that the atonement was really in place, properly in place. So this is the Luchot. So you see immediately that Yom Kippur has a lot to do with national consolation. But Yom Kippur doesn't begin on Yom Kippur. Well, Yom Kippur begins Rosh Hashanah, Seder Teshuvah. Yom Kippur begins with Elul, you know, whole business of Elul, Chodesh Elul, Moshe Rabbeinu going up to Har Sinai. So the author of the Bnei Yisachar, but he was never referred to as the Bnei Yisachar. You have to have a Galatianish intonation here. Bnei Yisachar. The Bnei Yisachar. So the Bnei Yisachar, his name was Tzvi Elimelech Diner, from the town of Diner. I visited there once, actually, one of my trips. He was a great-grandson of Rabbi Elimelech from Lizhansk. And actually, the name Tzvi Elimelech, the Elimelech, comes from the great-grandfather. So his name was Tzvi Elimelech from Diner. And in the Sefer Bnei Yisachar, he recommends, contrary to what it says in Shulchan Aruch, that we begin wishing each other Tiva v'chtima tova, have a good year, from Rosh Chodesh Elul. He says you begin it from Tu Ba'av. The Tu Ba'av is really, he moves it back by 2 weeks. Tu Ba'av, Chamishah Asar Ba'av, is really the initial kickoff of Yomim Noraim. And one of the proofs that there's something to this is this Mishnah in Maseret Tanit, Lo Yu Yomim Tovim LiYisrael, Chamishah Asar Ba'av, Uki Yom HaKippurim. That these two calendar dates are put together, one next to the other, they form a unit, because after the days of Puranut, of the 3 weeks, the 9 days, and Tisha B'Av itself, then we move into the period of the 7 weeks of the Haftarah of Yeshayahu, the seven Sheva Dinechemta of consolation, and it kicked off by Tu B'Av, and it culminates with Yom Kippur. So Parshat V'Etchanan is the Shabbat immediately after Tisha B'Av that we read the second set of Aseret HaDibrot, and it ends with Yom Kippur when we received it. So you see that this period of 7 weeks is really the period of Nechama, of consolation, and the Dibrot HaShni'im, the second version of the Aseret HaDibrot, is very much symbolic or representative of the fact that we received consolation. Now, in order for this to all make sense, we're going to have to accept a position that's subject to a machloket. And that is, the text of the Aseret HaDibrot, of the second set of the Luchot, was it the same text as Parshat Yitro, or was it the text of Parshat Ve'etchanan? You don't have to be a Vilna Goin to see immediately that the texts are not identical. As we say, learn in geometry, this congruency and this similarity. Right? Two triangles, they can be similar because they have the same angles, 60 degrees, 60 degrees, 60 degrees. Except that one can be a miniature triangle, one can be a gigantic triangle, but they're similar because they share the same angles. Whereas congruency means you can put one right on top of the other. So can you put one right on top of the other? No. Aserta Divrot of the second differs somewhat from the first. I mean, this is Nechama Leibowitz 1.1. When you have two texts in the Torah that seem to be identical, and then sometimes on the microscopic examination, sometimes you don't even need any glasses to see that there are differences. Sometimes the differences are subtle, like we pointed out when we were doing the second, the last five of the Dibrot, Lo Tirzach, Lo Tinaf, Lo Tignov, and so on, and we saw that in the second set there was a vavachibur, vilo tigno, vilo, vi. We gave some type of understanding what the vavachibur. We saw there was a difference between sheker and shav. One place said lo tana bereacha et sheker, and the other was lo tana bereacha et shav. The biggest difference is Shabbat. Not only because of the word zachor as opposed to shamor, but the very, very reason for Shabbat is radically different. In Parshat Yitro, we're familiar with this from Kiddush and Shabbat morning, Ki sheshet yamim asa Hashem et ha-shamayim et ha-aretz et yom mekor ha-shamam v'yanach v'mashvi al kein beirach Hashem et yom ha-shvi v'kacheu, which is the rationale, the reason is Briyat Olam, creation. In the Aseret HaDibrot, the Parshat Vatchanan, there's not one word about creation. It says, V'zacharta ki eved hayita beretz Mitzrayim, v'yiftecha Hashem alokecha misham, al kein tzivcha Hashem alokecha la'asot et yom ha-shabbat. The reason is Yitziat Mitzrayim. It's a completely different reason, and which means that Shabbat is complex. It's compounded with two different reasons. And there's a Zachor on one end and Shamor on the other end. And we're familiar with the famous Midrash of Zachor v'Shamor v'Dibur Echad, that Moshe Rabbeinu received both at the same Dibur, at the same time, by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which the author of the Lecha Dodi incorporates, Shamor v'Zachor v'Dibur Echad. And we see that clearly in the poem of Lecha Dodi. Which means you have to understand both together. You can't just take one and not the other. They're an integrated piece of Aseret HaDibrot. So if you look at source number 3, he quotes, there's an author, a modern author, he quotes as follows. Those who are studying Daf Yomi, this actually has shown up in the last day or two, from Maseret Baba Kama, Daf Nun Dalet Amud Bet. It says, L'chora Yipalei. He writes, V'kataftia La'luchot. In source number 3, in Parshat Kitisa, the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu was told by Kadosh Baruch Hu, "P'sol lecha shnei luchot avanim karishonim." Chisel out a second set, just like the first. But that's not good enough. V'chatafti al haluchot et hadvarim asher ayu al haluchot arishonim asher shivarta. And write on it exactly what you had on the first ones. You can't get any clearer than that. As if the Torah was concerned that Moshe Rabbeinu might not understand in the word Karishonim, like the first set, that it has to be exactly. So the Torah elaborates, V'chatafti al haluchot et advarim asher ayu al haluchot arishonim asher shibarta. And you shall chisel out exactly what you wrote on the first one. The ones that you broke, the ones that you shattered. Yet, the following, and so the author of this Panim Yafot says, something is really, really pele. It's beyond understanding. Hada Amar, that which is said in Baba Kama Daf Nun Dalet, mipneimar b'dibrot arishonot lo neimar bo tov. We know that the in Kaveret Avicha V'Timecha it says leman yarichun yamecha. You'll be enjoying long life, longevity. And the second dibrot it says leman yarichun yamecha uleman yitavlach. And there'll be good years. My grandfather, Lo Shalom, used to tell us that this was a Moshe Rabbeinu add-on. So he said, a bracha of arichut yamim alone is not necessarily a bracha. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, l'man arichun yamecha u'l'man yitavlach. There should be good years. Long years alone. Whether that's the pshat or not is totally irrelevant, but it's certainly a true statement of life. So the Gemara says, how come in the first set of the Dibrot, it didn't say Tov, Ho'il v'sofan lishtaber, because they're going to be destroyed, shattered. So therefore, it would not have the word Tov, good, in this set of the Luchot. Mashma, apparently, Shaseret HaDibrot, Dichtiv, Parashat Yitro, Haya B'Luchot HaRishonot, Vishabat Parashat Bet Hanan, Haya B'Luchot HaChronot. That apparently the basis of this Medrash is that that which we read in Parashat Yitro was the text of the first Luchot, set of Luchot, and that which we read in Parashat Vetchanan was the text of the second Luchot. Ve'eino mashmot ha-katuv, but this does not jive with the understanding of the Pasuk. V'chatafti et al ha-luchot, et ha-dvarim asher hayu ha-luchot ha-rishon asher she-shibarta. It doesn't match at all. And Parashat Ekev and the Dvarim Perek Yud, it also says, v'yichtov ha-luchot kamichtav rishon. When Moshe Rabbeinu reviews this whole episode of the Egel, he says, and I was told to write on the second set exactly what was on the first. So what kind of medrash is this? This is a very, very difficult, very, very difficult medrash, but it assumes that there is a machloket, and indeed there is a machloket. Just last night somebody pointed out to me that there's a Tosfot in Masechet Bava Batra that says something absolutely startling, that not all of the Amoraim were familiar with that apparently a word here and a word there in the Torah may have been part of the version A and version B. It's absolutely startling because it just rocks the whole boat about our understanding of each word in the Torah being Misinai, but there is a line in Tosfot that suggests that not all of the Tanaim or Amoraim had every single word in the Torah the way we have it today. The only subtle change that we have in the Torah between Yemenite Sefrei Torah and everybody else's is found in Parshat Noach, where it's instead of Vayu, it's Vayehi with a vav at the end. It does make hardly a difference at all in the understanding. And also, there's a change between a letter Aleph and a Hey at the end of the word, where it says Petzua Daka in Parshat Kitetze, whether it's written with an Aleph or written with a Hey at the end. Dalet Kaf Aleph, Dalet Kaf Hey, doesn't change the word at all. And so those are the only changes that we are familiar with between the Eidot, between communities today, and that which led Ramosha Feinstein and others to have a whole discussion whether an Ashkenazi can get an Aliyah in a Sefer Torah Teimani because of this subtle change. And here you have a Tosfot saying, making a comment, well, not everybody had the word Tov. that's something which is really startling. But anyway, I just, you know, mentioned that so that you should be startled, as I was last night. But what you do see is that there is a machloket. But I'm going to follow this line of reasoning, that indeed the luchot hashni'im, the second set of the luchot, which now has the text of Parshat Vetchanan, does include the word tov. Why? Because the post Tisha B'Av experience is tov. Consolation means when we can only get better. We've bottomed out. It can only get better from here. And what's interesting is the Gemara in Masechet Psachim, source number 4, the Gemara brings an interesting idea based on a pasuk in Sefer Iyov, Perek Kafchet, Elokim hevin darka v'hu yadat mekoma. Kadosh Baruch Hu knows his ways and he knows his place. And the drash is as follows. Yodea Kadosh Baruch Hu et Yisrael she'enam yicholim mekabel gzirot shel Romayim. At the time of destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, Kadosh Baruch Hu knew that they'd never survive Rome as a people. Therefore, Lefika Chiklal Tam to Bavel. Therefore, the Galut was to Bavel. Bavel, we had a better chance of surviving as Jews. And the Gemara even explains, Lo Higla Kadosh Baruch Hu et Yisrael LeBavel Ela Mivnei SheKarov LiShonam LeLashon Torah. The Aramaic language, as a Semitic language, is very close to the language of the Torah, and therefore this will prevent some measure of cultural assimilation. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Mneshe Shigran LeBeit Iman. We were sent to the home of its mother. What does that mean? It means the cradle of Am Yisrael was not Eretz Yisrael, but the cradle of Am Yisrael was in the area of Bavel. So, Mashal Adam Shekas Al Ishto, an analogy, a person who gets angry at his wife, and he throws her out of the house. Lehechan Shigra, Mishagra, where does he send her to? The Beit Ima, sends her to her mother's house. V'hainu de Rabbi Alexandria de Amar, shlosha chazru limatatan. There are three that returned to their original base. Elohein. One is Yisrael. The second is Kesef Mitzrayim, the money of Egypt that Am Yisrael took out from Mitzrayim. And the third was the Luchot. The Yisrael Hadamaran, what we just said now, Am Yisrael is returned to Bavel. Kesef Mitzrayim, as it says, Malachim Aleph, Vahi Bashana Hamishit Lamelech Rechavam, Allah Sheshak, Melech Mitzrayim al Yerushalayim, and he robbed and he took, plundered Yerushalayim. So the monies of Mitzrayim ultimately make it back its way to Mitzrayim. And with regard to the Luchot, Dichtiv, Vashabrem Le'enehem, I will shatter them. Le'enichem, Hatanya, it says in a brighter, Luchot nishperu, votiot porchot. The Luchot were shattered, but the letters flew out back to our Kadosh Baruch Hu. Which means that there is some type of connection of the breaking of the Luchot and connecting to Am Yisrael. It means when a Kadosh Baruch Hu sends Am Yisrael back to Bavel, he's actually, to use the computer language, putting it on reset. Reset. All right, let's do this again. Just like Avram Avinu came from Aram Naharaim and so on, and made it eventually into, there was Galut to Mitzrayim, and then we got into Eretz Yisrael. All right, we were thrown out of Eretz Yisrael. Let's go reset. Let's start again from the same place and make it back. And so too, the Otiyot Porchot, the letters of the Aseret HaDibrot, fly up to Shamayim. All right, and let's reset, and now they're going to come down again. Which is an indication of consolation, of reconnecting. It's just like this, like the first step of reconnecting. Let's reset. And then when we read that section on Tisha B'Av for Mincha, and we say Shlosh Esrei Midot, Hashem Hashem Kel Vachum Bechanun Erech Apayim Rav Chesed VeEmet. So what is Rav Chesed? So the Gemara says Beit Hillel Omrim Rav Chesed Mate Klapi Chesed. He should somehow shift towards chesed. Why is that necessary? Because one of the midot of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is emet. Emet means it does not tolerate any compromise. Emet means factual. Exactly the way it is. If you happen to be 51% Rasha and 49% Tzaddik, you're a Rasha. There's nothing we can do about it. Matei Klapi Chesed means to somehow doctor up the scale that tips the other way. And it should look as if there is a chesed side, a zchut side for Am Yisrael. So Kadosh Baruch Hu is Rav Chesed, the master of chesed. And as a master of chesed, matei klapei chesed. So clearly, the usage of the Parshat Ki Tisa immediately in the end of Tisha B'Av, which kicks in, as I said, name of the Rav, kicks in this whole spirit of Nechama, is part and parcel of the second Luchot experience. And in source number 6, the source of our Slichot, Vayavor Hashem Apanav Vayikra, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ilmalei Mikra Katuv, Yiv Shalom Roth. If not for this Pasuk being in the Chumash, we never would have been able to say the following on our own. Malameit Shenitatev HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kishliach Tzibur. As if HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as if to say, dressed himself with a talus, as a shliach tzibur, v'he'alo l'Moshe seda tefillah, and pointed out to Moshe Rabbeinu, this is what you should be saying in the event that there's national sin. If there's national transgression, use this formula and it's going to work. And by the way, this becomes the reason why a chazan during shlichus wears a talis even at nighttime. You know, many shuls, if the shliach tzibur from Meirev doesn't wear a talis because there's no mitzvah of tzitzis at nighttime, so why should you wear a talis at night? So if those shuls that do, obviously there's no bracha made, but it's only covered at tzibur, so he wears a talis. But for shlichus, we were careful that the chazan always wears a talis. Why? Because of this. Because the shliach tzibur is almost playing a role. He's the shliach, not only of the tzibur, but he's a shliach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who brought the shlosh esrei midot to Moshe Rabbeinu, the 13 attributes. Ve'era l'Moshe seda tefillah, amar lo, kol zman shYisrael chotim, so long as Am Yisrael sins, ya'asu lefanai kaseder zeh, you shall pronounce this formula. V'ani mocheh lehem, and I will atone and forgive. Hashem Hashem. Why is it twice named Hashem? Ani hu kodem sheyichta adam. I am God before he sins. Vane hu lachar sheyichta adam ve'aser tshuva. After a person does tshuva and receives atonement from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's the same HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which means, of course, the same HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It means the yachas, the relationship, will be the same. You're going to be able to reestablish the same relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu even after the sin. And all this it begins in Mincha on Tisha B'Av. It kicks in this whole spirit of the Luchot HaAchronot or Luchot HaShni'im. In modern Hebrew, it's Luchot HaAchronim or Luchot HaShni'im. In Mishneic Hebrew, it's Luchot HaAchronot. Just like cups. Kos is Nekeva in modern Hebrew. So it's Arba Kosot. But you'll see in the Mishnah, Arba'a Kosot. The Arba'a means four in masculine. But in the modern Hebrew, you would not say Arba'a Kosot, you'd say Arba Kosot. So those are the rules of the Dikduk of Mishnah. So that's why the Rambam also writes it in the language of the Mishnah. So it would be Luchot Achronot. But in modern Hebrew, it's Luchot Achronim or Luchot Ashniim. Okay. Now, an interesting point. The source number 7, the Mishnah in Masechet Moed Katan tells us that with the absence of Beit HaMikdash, there is a reduction of Simcha on some of the Chagim, vis-a-vis the laws of Evel. Now again, we are familiar with the end game, Halacha L'Ma'aseh. So God forbid there's a burial and a Shiva before Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot. So the onset of the Yom Tov negates the Shiva immediately. If the Shiva was completed, so the onset of the Yom Tov negates the Shloisha. This we all know. But the Mishnah says as follows in source number 7. Rabbi Leza Omer, Mishacharav Beit HaMikdash, from days of Churban HaBayit, Atzeret kishabbat. Atzeret means Chag HaShavuot. Chag HaShavuot is to be considered like Shabbat vis-a-vis Evel. Now what's the story with Shabbat? Shabbat, it counts to the counting of Shiva. If you wouldn't, nobody would ever finish sitting Shiva. There's always some Shabbat somewhere in the middle. Not always, but usually. So what happens with Shabbat, it counts to the days of Shiva. And there are laws of Avilut on Shabbat. But not all the laws, there's a relaxation, but not a full relaxation. Certainly not a suspension. It's not a suspension. For example, the law that the din in Shiva, I know it's a hard one, that we don't greet each other during Shiva. It's a hard thing. People come to be Menachem Ovel, and then there's a big Shalom Aleichem going on. That's mamash asur. There's no hellos and no goodbyes. Now, I know it's hard. Even harder is if an Ovel comes to Shul in the middle of Shiva on Shabbat, she's not supposed to greet anybody Shabbat Shalom, and you're not supposed to greet them Shabbat Shalom. And that person is not supposed to sit in the same seat. You're supposed to take a corner seat, sit away from everybody and not socially integrate. But what you find, unfortunately, and I'm not saying this is any bad, it's coming from a good place, people feel that they want to, make the person feel a little bit better and not feel alone. The whole purpose of Avilut is loneliness, by the way, to a certain degree. The person does feel alone. But not to promote any type of social contact. So the Mishnah here brings a view of Rabbi Lezer that says that after Churban HaBayit, the Yom Tov of Shavuot does not negate Avelut as the other Chagim, but it's to be considered like Shabbat, which means you don't sit formally, but it counts to the counting of Shiva, and you'd continue picking up sitting Shiva after Chag HaShavuot. That's this opinion. Rabbi Gamliel Omer, Rosh Hashanah v'Yom Kippurim kiregalim. The Rosh Hashanah and Kippur are like the Chagim. Chachamim omrim, lo kidivrei zeh, v'lo kidivrei zeh, neither like this, nor like that, ela atzeret kiregalim, the Shavuot is like a Chag, like Pesach and Sukkot that does negate Evel, and Rosh Hashanah v'Yom Kippurim kishabbat. And Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, like Shabbat, which means you'd continue Shiva after Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So listen to these views that we're generally not familiar with. So the Rambam tells us in source number 8, Halacha kechachamim beomram atzeret kiregalim. The halacha is like the chachamim who say that Shavuot is like any other chag, and it does negate Evel. And Kiram Gamliel who says Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur kiregalim, that Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is also like a Yom Tov. So in other words, we've actually made a type of split psak in order to squeeze out the lenient view on all sides. So that's why when it comes to Halacha L'maaseh, the days that negate Evel are Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. All of the above. But you see in the Mishnah that there was some discussion about Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur and Shavuot after Churban HaBayit. So I want to pick up on the Atzeret Ki Shabbat, even though again, it's not the Halacha. But once you see a view mentioned in the Mishnah, at least as a theoretical idea, there's some logic here that Chag HaShavuot, the day of Matan Torah, there is some parallel to Shabbat, and not just from the technical laws of Avelut on Shabbat, but there's some thematic connection between a Matan Torah that took place on Chag HaShavuot and every single Shabbat. And what I'm going to say is not really so far-fetched Because Chag HaShavuot is determined not by a calendar date. It's the only Yom Tov in the Luach of the calendar that has nothing at all to do with a calendar date. It has to do with the 50th day of Sfirat Omer. That's what it has to do with. It never says a date in the Torah about Chag HaShavuot. Never. But it has to do with Ad Mimocharat HaShabbat HaShvi'it Tisperu Chamishim Yom. And when does it begin? Mimocharat HaShabbat. Because of course, but the Torah Shabbat comes along and says that that doesn't mean the weekly Shabbat, it means the day after the first day of Pesach. Fine, it was all to do with the Tzedokim on this. But the fact is that the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer is also given in terms of Shabbat. Mimocharat HaShabbat. Ad Mimocharat HaShabbat HaShvi'it Tisperu Chamishim Yom. So Chag HaShavuot has a nickname Shabbat as well, which may have triggered what Rabbi Lezer says, that after Churban HaBayit, let it revert back to being of Shabbat status and not Yom Tov status. So on a theoretical level, we can talk about this legitimately, even though from a halachic standpoint, Rabbi Lezer's view is rejected. But from a theoretical Hashkafah point of view, there is legitimacy. And if we take a look at source number 9, and this is the Aseret HaDibrot of Parshat Vetchanan, the second version. Shamor et Yom Shabbat lekadsho, kasher tzivcha Hashem Elokecha. Sheshet yamim tavod, asita kol melachtecha, v'yom shvi'i Shabbat l'Hashem Elokecha. Lo ta'aseh kol melacha, ata v'yidcha v'yitecha, v'yidcha v'amatecha, v'yishorcha v'chamorcha v'chol b'amtecha, v'gercha Hashem b'shvilecha, leman yanuach avdecha v'amatcha kamocha. So that word yanuach does not appear in the first set, by the way. Leman yanuach, shall rest. And now, v'zacharta, Ki Evid Hayita Beres Mitzrayim, you should remember that you were slaves in Egypt. Vayotziyacha Hashem Elokecha Misham, Biyad Chazaka Zoran Tuyah, Kadosh Baruch Hu took you out with great strength, great power, might. Al Kein Tzivcha Hashem Elokecha La'asot Et Yom HaShabbat. There are some key words here that I underlined. Shamor, and Yanuach, and Zchira, and Asiya. If you turn the page, source number 10, this is lifted out of Parshat Re'eh from Chumash Devarim, and it's the section about Shavuot. Shiva Shavuot tispor lach, you shall count 7 weeks. Me'achel chermesh bakama tachel lispor shiva Shavuot. This has to do with the Omer. Count 7 weeks. Ve'asita chag Shavuot l'Hashem Elokecha misat nitvat chidyatcha asher titen kasher v'recha Hashem Elokecha ve'samachta lefnei Hashem Elokecha ata v'incha v'itecha v'avdecha v'amatecha v'alevi Hashem v'sherecha and so on ve'zacharta ki ever ayita be'mitzrayim ve'shamarta ve'asita et achukim ha'ela. So here 4 words are underlined. Ve'asita, you shall do. Ve'samachta, you should be happy. Ve'zacharta, you shall remember. Ve'shamarta, you shall. Vishamarta is also the guard. Zacharta is memory and guard. Zocha and Shamar. Which, on source number 9, we had Asiya, La Asot. We had Zacharta, Zachira. We had Shamor, which is Shamarta. And instead of Simcha, you have Yanuach. And we'll see in a moment that they're first cousins. The Leman Yanuach, so that you should rest, was to promote the Simcha of Shabbat. So there's actually a parallel in the way Shiva Shavuot is described in Parshat Re'eh, in the way Shabbat is described in Sefer Dvarim in Parshat Ve'etchanan. In the city of Raisha, which the modern day Polish city is called Rzeszów. Rzeszów, right? We were there, those were with me. The Rzeszów, I remember once speaking to Dr. Yosef Burg, Zichron Lebracha, the perennial Chavre Knesset and minister from the Mizrahi. So we were schmoozing once, and he says, "Ata mivin Yiddish? Ata medaber Yiddish? You speak Yiddish?" I said, "Yeah, beta ravada. You know, ich bin Ayid, and I'm Jewish, right? So I can speak a little Yiddish." So he says, we were talking about Poland, and he says as follows. He says, "De goyim riefen das Rzeszów, aber de Welt rief das Reiche." The Goyim called it the city of Rzeszów, but the world calls it Raisha. He says, "Ata mivin mi ze avelt?" You know I'm talking about the Welt. What does it mean, the Welt? You go to a yeshiva, and the Roshiva gives a shir, and he says, "The avelt's kasha, the world asks." You know, I never saw such a kasha in the New York Times, or the Washington Post, I never even on CNN. I never heard of Veltz Kasha, you know, on a Tosfot. You know, it's a Veltz Kasha on a Rambam. What is a Veltz Kasha? It's everybody asks. You know, every Ben Tyra who learned this Rambam, who learned this Tosfot, ask this question. It's another way of saying it's a famous question. But where is it a famous question? It's in-house famous question. In the Beit Midrash, it's a famous question. But that's called the Veltz Kasha, because that's a person's world. That's real. Who cares what the New York Times is writing? Right? That's not the lo relevante. It doesn't mean anything to me. So that's what Dr. Boob said. Says the Veldt calls it Reisha. I mean, that's us. You know, we call it Reisha. So that, the fact on the map it's called Jezreel, that's incidental, right? Incidental. There's a famous lawyer in Washington D.C., Nat Lewin, right? Famous lawyer. So his name is Natan. He's named after his great grandfather, Natan Nata Levine, who was the Rav of Reisha, who was the father of the next Rav of Reisha, Rav Aaron Levine, who was the father of Professor Yitzhak Lewin from Yeshiva University, who I remember very well from YU, and I was acquainted with one of his sons, a brother of Nat Lewin. So you have a mishpacha here. So this Nat Lewin, the lawyer, was here in Yerushalayim in Yemin Moshe about 20 years ago on Chag HaShavuot, and he translated into Hebrew the shir that his great grandfather gave in Yiddish, his opening drasha in 1904 in the shul in Zhezhov in Reisha, and it was about this section about what he called the Arba'a Lishonot, just like we have four expressions of Geula and Pesach, Botzeiti, Vitzalti, Vigalti, Velakachti. So he says there are four expressions of understanding the essence of Torah embedded in source number 10, Ve'asita, Ve'samachta, Ve'zacharta, Ve'shamarta. I'm not going to go over the whole drasha now because it was a beautiful drasha, but that was the headline of it. I spoke about it in Ol Nechama the past Chag HaShavuot. These four expressions parallel the four expressions that are found in Parshat Ve'etchanan. So there is a connection between Shabbat and Atzeret. And if you look at source number 11 from the Rambam, Arba'at Dvarim Nemru B'Shabbat, four concepts are there for Shabbat, two from the Torah, Shnayim in the Torah, Shnayim in the Divrei Sofrim, two rabbinic add-ons. Vein Mufurashin Al-Yidei Navim, they're actually alluded to in Sefer Yeshayahu. The two from the Torah are Zachor and Shamor, and the two from the Nevi'im are Kavod and Oneg. As it says in Yeshayahu, Perek Nun Chet, V'karata L'Shabbat Oneg, V'Likdosh Hashem, Mechubad. So that's a shir in itself. What is kavod? What is oneg? But zachor and shamor go together. But what is zachor? So zachor is the mitzvah of kiddush. Zachor is the mitzvah of kiddush Friday night. That's how it's defined halachically. The Rambam says it openly in the Hilchot Shabbat, Perek Lamed, Perek Chavtet. That's where he has the mitzvah of kiddush. But what is zachor and shamor? So what does shamor mean? What does Shamor mean? How are you Shomer Shabbat? So on the one hand, you're Shomer Shabbat by not doing Melacha. So that's the negative side of Shabbat. Don't do the don'ts. But Shamor also indicates something positive. So we're supposed to do something to create an atmosphere of Shabbat. Chazal gave us some good concrete ideas of what to do in order to create an atmosphere of Shabbat. And one of the most famous ones is the rabbinic restriction we call muktzah. Remember, the Rav Son Chaim Soloveitchik pointed out once that when we educate our children to Shabbat, we don't start with a listing of 39 melachot, and we don't start with a listing of concepts. You don't expect a little child, a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old, to be able to understand concepts of davar she'eino mitkaven, sikresha delo nichalei, and the basic of the melechet machshevet. These are basic principles in understanding the laws of Shabbat. But we tell them that you can't play with this toy. Why? Muksa. A kid will walk around at age 3 with the word muksa already. That some toys you can play with on Shabbat, and some toys you don't play with as child. And that's how kids are initiated into the world of Melechet Shabbat, through a derabbanan of muksa. So the Rambam tells us a few reasons why we have muksa. So in source number 12, Asru Chachamim L'Tatel Miktzat Varim Shabbat, Kederesh Oseh B'Chol. Chazal prohibited the movement, not the touching, the movement of certain objects on Shabbat the way we would do them on a weekday. Why is this prohibition? Chachamim said, Ma'im hazilu nevi'im, our prophets have, this is Yishael, v'tzivu, and they commanded, shelo yehi luchach b'shabbat ki luchach b'chol, that our walking on Shabbat should not be like on weekday, that's why we shouldn't be running, unless you're running to shul or shir, v'lo sichat Shabbat ki sichat b'chol, and the chatter, the talk on Shabbat, you shouldn't be talking about the stock market or the politics, shenemar v'daber davar, kal v'chom shelo yeh tiltul b'shabbat ki tiltul b'chol, things that you're moving in your hands, in your pocket, shouldn't be on the Shabbat like in the weekday. Kedei shelo yeh kiyom kol beinav. So it shouldn't look like a regular day, and you might, by accident, by moving certain instruments, moving around a pen and pencil, you might come to write because you're holding it. Just don't move the pen and pencil, and you're not going to write on Shabbat. But the bottom line is, the Rambam says, this is all part of the idea of leman yanuach. It creates an atmosphere of resting. And then the Rambam says, but what about somebody who really doesn't work? If you take the 39 malachot, so it has to do with agriculture, it has to do with cooking and baking, it has to do with building, it has to do with this, that. It has to do with so many activities during the week that the Vilna Gaon said, if you want to know what you're supposed to do during the week, check out the 39 malachot of Shabbat, and that's what you're supposed to be doing during the week, what's forbidden on Shabbat. But you know, let's assume somebody, and I say this in a positive sense, sitting and learning. That's what he does. He's an avreich and a koilo. So he's not building, he's not plowing, he's not reaping, he's not cooking, he's not that. You can go through the whole week and never, never touch a malacha of Shabbat on a Tuesday. Right? That's what. So what's the difference between your Shabbat and your Tuesday? There's no difference. Right? Some people said in some circles, how do you know the way, you know, guys get dressed for Shabbat today is very, very interesting. So they say, what's the difference? How can you tell that somebody's dressed for Shabbos as opposed to when he's not dressed for Shabbos? He ties his hair in the back. After that, you'd never know it's Shabbat. I was going to say he puts a shirt in, but that's not true. Absolutely not true. So here, the Rambam says the muktzah guarantees that even if a person is not engaged in any of the malachot formally of Shabbat during the weekday, comes Shabbat, he knows that it's going to be different. Underlined in the next section, nimtza comes out shelo shabbat shvita nikeret. That if it's business as usual on Shabbat, that's Wednesday and Thursday, then it's not recognizable that it's Shabbat. And that's why Chazal threw in this muktzah factor, so that you should feel today is being different and create a sensation atmosphere. Why? Because that promotes the idea that you know that it's Shabbat Lashem Elokecha. What you should be doing on Shabbat is not only what you're not supposed to be doing on Shabbat. We're so focused on what's asur, prohibited on Shabbat. What are you supposed to be doing? You're supposed to be engaged in things that connect you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whether it's through learning, through singing Zmirot, and through Machalim and the Sudash Lishit and the three meals and so on. And just to end this off, source number 14. Source number 14 is Chagai, beginning of Bayit Sheni. And the old folks are crying, and the young kids are dancing because they're now seeing the Beit HaMikdash. But there are people 80 years old and over who remembered the first Beit HaMikdash. And they're saying, Chevra Zelo Ze, this is not what it was. It's not what it was. Almost reminiscent of the Rambam's view in Perush HaMishnah, Masechet Rosh Hashanah, that in the days of Bayit Sheni, we still continued to fast Tisha B'Av. Because there was still a Churban. There was a Beit HaMikdash up there running, but it was still a Churban. It still wasn't the same. And Chagai consoles them. And says, Gadol yeh kvod habayit hazeh, ha'acharon min arishon. This ultimately is going to be greater than the first. So there's what to be consoled about. The second, the last, and one second, but it's a far cry from the last. So in source 15, I'm not going to read the whole thing now, but the Ravelvul Soloveitchik, that's the Rav's uncle, Yitzhak Zev, quotes his father, Rav Chaim, the Rav's grandfather, says that there is no such thing as three Batei Mikdash. In history, there are three Batei Mikdash. But in Halacha, there are only two. There's a Rishon and Acharon. The first was built by Shlomo and destroyed by the Babylonians. The second was built in the days of Chagai, Malachi, and Zechariah, the beginning of Bayit Sheni. And then at the time of the Churban, it's on pause. It wasn't totally destroyed. It's on pause. The building's not there. But sometimes you then push the pause button out and it continues. So after 2,000 years, it's going to continue. So what began in Bayit Sheni is really Bayit Shlishi. It's really the last Beit HaMikdash. Bayit Sheni and Shlishi is hyphenated, and it's called Bayit HaAcharon. And this is the great consolation of the Luchot Achronot, of Parshat Vetchanan, of the Dibrot HaShniim, that it reminisces, it reflects the Bayit HaAcharon that Chagai said, that Gadol Yekvod HaBayit HaZeh HaAcharon Min HaRishon. And to that end, the symbolism of the second set of the Aseret HaDibrot of Parshat Vetchanan that we read immediately after Tisha B'Av will usher in an era of Amar Hashem Tzvaot, U'Bamakom HaZeh Eten Shalom Lo'um Hashem Tzvaot. Mir Hashem, we should enter into Tisha B'Av this year without having to say keynote. You know, there's a minhag in Yerushalayim that after Tisha B'Av you put your keynote in the Gniza. And I think the one who started that minhag was the printers. He says, you should buy a new one next year. But nevertheless, yeah. What was that? What was that? Please not announce this one, too. I didn't announce.
Okay.
So, Mirz Hashem, when we return, the end of August, in the meantime, it's still going to be on Wednesday, unless otherwise indicated. The last Wednesday of August, it should all. Hopefully, we'll have an opportunity to be mesameach on Tisha B'Av, and it should be a great. As the Navi Zechariah said, that Tzomer Aviv, Tzomer Chamishi, Tzomer Shvi, Tzomer Siri, yeah, the Beit Yehuda, the Sason Simcha, ule Moadim Tovim.
Says that mukta was established for Yom Kippur, not for Shabbat. That's what it says.